Brian, it was a hard-fought battle. Thanks so much for joining us. And certainly, I think when you look at this series, clearly Tampa just happy to be there in the Stanley Cup final, but they want to win this thing as well. What was your perspective of the victory last night?
Well, I think it showed how different the team is from last year. You know, we had conversations before earlier in the year and right before the playoffs started. And, you know, that's the message, you know, that I was trying to convey to you guys because I get to see them every day, right? And I think people had noticed overall, certainly, but I'm not sure that everybody had noticed to the degree that they had changed. And yes, because of the six or seven different guys that they have on the team this year from last year, but it was their outlook and what they thought, you know, was important that really showed up. I think they did what they had to do. Their patience level, their attention to detail defensively, all those types of things, I think maybe surprised a lot of people. And they did it. For me, guys, there are two types of teams, right, that go into the playoffs, the ones that have pressure and then everybody else. And the Lightning certainly were a team that had pressure. You know, they were a favorite by pretty much everybody to whatever degree, but they were a favorite, right? So, and especially because of last year and where they, you know, they fell flat, never won a game, you know, that pressure was really amplified. So I think now you have Dallas who comes at it from the opposite side, because to me, they were not a favorite team, and I think most would agree. So they can go through and they just build their momentum. But for me, when you're a favorite team like the Lightning, I remember it from back in the day being part of it, that the pressure for the favorite teams is in the first two rounds. And then when you get to the conference finals, you start to feel a little bit better. And now that the Lightning are into the finals, I think a lot of the pressure is off. Now you just go win. You know, the engine sort of smooths out. There's a bit of an exhale. That doesn't mean you're going to let up. But this is where you're supposed to be. And so now you can feel pretty good about yourself, and now it's like, let's go like hell and win this thing.
All right, Berkey, fire away.
Hey, Brian, how are you? Thanks for doing this for us.
I'm good, Brian. How are you?
I'm good, thanks. How is Stammer? Any update on him or any insight?
Good question. That was the first time I saw him last night, too. They have closed it down even for us, Brian. I really don't know what his status is. He was seen on the ice with the team the other day. So he has skated, I guess, sporadically over the last couple of days. What that means exactly, I have no idea. All I know is that I'm keeping my fingers crossed for him, because I would hate to think they go all the way to the cup and he never gets a chance to step on the ice. But other than that, I don't know. I don't know what his status is.
Well, that's the only reason we invited you on the show, darn it.
Okay, bye. Nice talking to you, buddy. It's like, don't go away, Matt. Just go away, right?
Yeah, exactly.
How about the other injuries there on Tampa? We know that's they're a heavily favored team, but if Braden Point is as, frankly, injured as he looked, that's not a good sign. And Cirelli, we know, played, but he's pretty banged up, too. How's the team doing as a whole? Looks like they're kind of taped together right now.
Yeah, well, that's not unusual, is it? By the time you get to the finals, you have to keep your fingers crossed. I mean, look what happened to Colorado, right? That was the epitome of it. They just got knocked out with, what, five or six guys and major guys, including their goaltenders. You got to be lucky as well as good in order to get to the finals. As far as Braden goes, he put in a gutty effort, that's for sure. I was quite frankly surprised that he played that game. I figured they would try to give him, you know, as much time as possible with a game in hand. And if they had to pull him out in game seven and play him, naturally you're going to do that. But he was well enough to play. He didn't have that burst, that's for sure. So whatever he's fighting through, it looks to me like, I'm sure it does to you, that it's chronic, whatever it is, and they'll manage him. He'll come in and out of the lineup if he has to. He's a tough kid. I know that. I can tell you he's not one, you know, he's not a whiner. He's not, well, I don't feel quite right. I don't know if I can do it. He's not that guy at all. So if he can go, he will go and empty the tank. And they certainly need him, because for me, he's the transmission of the offense. He changes the speed of everything, because when he's out there, of course, he can grab the puck, comes back deep. And that's what I love about him. That's what he's learned about his game. He doesn't hang around the neutral zone and wait for a pass from the D. Comes back and gets it. It's like a handoff to the running back. and then he can take it through the neutral zone. The fewer passes in playoff hockey for me in the neutral zone, the better off you are. That's why everybody looks at Barzal for a good reason. That's why you look at Braden Point, because they skate the daylight, and they can get the daylight really well, and they scare the hell out of the defense and get in the zone often, at least by a couple of feet on their own. So, and he, you know, he steps on the gas, and he can go from second gear to fifth gear real fast. And then that excites the rest of the offense, and next thing you know, the opposition has spread out a little bit, and now other guys are getting through the neutral zone better. So he really is a catalyst in a lot of ways. That's even before he gets inside the blue line and starts, you know, making his magic with Kucherov and Palat. So he's important, no doubt.
Chatting with Brian Engblom, it's Nick Alberga, Brian Burke, and Justin Bourne here on Hockey Central. Handicapping the Conn Smythe from the perspective of the Tampa Bay Lightning, I'm sure you've run out of superlatives to talk about Victor Hedman's game, but how would you handicap the Conn Smythe race right now from Tampa's perspective?
Well, interesting, isn't it? Because I think Braden was right there on the forefront. Now he's missed a couple of games, and of course, that, you know, that matters. But also, you can make that argument, well, they lost games that he was out. So therefore, you know, he is that much more important. But Victor Hedman has been brilliant. He has gone to another level. His confidence level, I think, has even surprised me when it comes to scoring goals. But they've convinced him over the years, because he's sort of that typical Swede almost, you know, like, ah, shucks, you know, I know I can play. I know I'm a good player. But he's more likely to make plays than he is to finish them, always looking for something better for somebody else sort of thing. But they finally, I think, over the years have gotten to him, and he understands that, Victor, you need to shoot to score, because that obviously helps the team, but it opens up the power play, it opens up everything else. So I think when you see players like him, he's at that level now. There's a difference when you shoot to hit the net or you shoot to score. And when you shoot to score, that confidence level comes, especially when you see the results that Victor's getting. Now he's a really dangerous weapon. I would say double that he's ever been that I have seen since I've been here. And that is really important. And that is aside from all the things he can do defensively. I mean, I haven't seen – he's unorthodox, right, because he has that great speed, incredible reach. But I just love the way he plays defense, because it's modern defenseman. He swoops around out there because he can. And that's why he can be a little bit difficult to play with, because you have to let him do, you know, what he does. You don't turn a plow, you know, a thoroughbred into a plow horse, right? He's a thoroughbred. Let him do what he does, because he has an intuitive feel for the game, and he knows his own strengths, and he can blow up plays on the opposition side of the red line and come right across to his partner's side. And I've seen the look of astonishment on opposing forwards, like, where the hell did he come from? He can swallow up the last 10 or 15 feet between himself and an opposing player in a heartbeat and blow the play up, and they don't know what happened. So you let Victor do that, and it's incredible to watch night after night, and he's just an imposing force everywhere, and he never seems to get tired.
Berkey, go ahead.
Yeah, so, Brian, the 7D obviously is kind of radical in our league. Anything different is radical. But it seems to have worked extremely well for the Lightning. Talk about that, please.
Well, Coop's been doing it since he coached in the American League. And he's done it on and off to degrees since he's been here with the Lightning. 2 years ago, we went back and checked. 2 years ago, he did it 34 times during the regular season. Last year, he only did it a couple of times. And, you know, it just, there are a lot of different factors, of course. You know, which forwards are playing well, who's not, how do you keep guys involved, what's the makeup of the seven. So, especially going into these playoffs and the opposition that they had, they knew it was going to be a lot of smash mouth net front stuff against Columbus. They needed Luke Shen in there, because Luke, God love him. I love the way he has played. He knows his role. He knows what he can do and he can't do. He can go from the corner to the front of the net in his own zone and take no prisoners. And the reason they lost for me last year was Columbus beat them up in front of Andre Vasilevsky. Luke Shen does not let that happen. And the other guys have followed suit. That's why Shen gets to play. So Shen is the seventh guy. There's no doubt about that. So he has come in. He's done that. He boxes out, and he'll pound a guy right into the ice. Now, Coop likes to have that. So you go on to the Boston Bruins. What do you need? Yeah, you need guys in front of the net. What did you need in this series when you had guys like Martin and, you know, that fourth line or third line, whatever you want to call it? What do they do? And even Anders Lee, where does he park? 8 feet from the net. So you need guys with enough beef and the will to do it and not just be sort of cruising around and trying to steal pucks in front of the net. Now, the rest of the makeup, I think, pretty much speaks for itself. And when it comes to the lack of forwards, and I know the one game where they went down, the point got hurt, and they went down to nine forwards, well, that's never happened before, and I think John Cooper said that. So, yeah, you take your chances. But let's face it, when you get in the playoffs and you are in a game where the game is on the line, who's playing? I don't care if you have 19 forwards playing. Your top six guys are out there. Go again, go again, go again. So what does it really matter? Your fourth line is going to sit, whether it's two guys or all three guys, they're going to sit on the bench most of the time anyway. So he doesn't fear that. Excuse me. And the seven guys that play defense understand in the regular season that, you know, Victor Hedman, Victor, you're going to get some fewer shifts. But he's fresh now. Same thing with McDonough. But now in the playoffs, now Coop has the chance to go, I need him now, I need him now. You can bench him for a while. No, it's getting rough. Get him back out there. And they play that card really well.
Brian, there aren't many instances of a team at the trade deadline making two moves or making a move that so directly affect the team positively. You know, they gave up first for Goodrow and Coleman. And you're talking about, like, you know, they're only going with 11 forwards some nights, and even when you go into overtime, you're only rolling maybe nine. You know, it makes those guys so much more important to have such a well-rounded, you know, a deep top nine. Maybe you could tell us a little bit about those two directly and how they've affected the makeup of this team.
Oh, they've been terrific. They were the final, you know, tumblers that, you know, fell into place for them. And they've unlocked a team that is, as I said, much different than last year. A team that can grind, and a team that, the best expression I've used several times during these playoffs is, and I think it's always important every year, you're going to be in a lot of tie games, a lot of one goal games. And it comes down to, we're comfortable. Are you? And who's going to blink first? Last year, no, they are not comfortable in those games, always trying to blow it open. This year, they figured out by January, we're comfortable in those games. And then when the trading deadline came around, they got Goodrow and Coleman. Those are the last two tumblers, and they just had to find which line combination worked. Yanni Gourde was the guy, and that line has been fantastic. They can use them to match up. Because Goodrow and Coleman both have speed, but they also have a snarl to them. They're not huge guys, and they're not fighters per se. But Goodrow's dropped the mitts a couple of times. He did at the end of, right before the pause in Boston. And you know how that always carries over in any generation. He had a couple of scraps there, and that went a long ways with his teammates. And Coleman has done the same thing. And they run at people, but they can skate. And they understand the game. So they've matched up. They matched up a lot against Bergeron line, you know, against the Bruins in several games. They've been able to move them around. They forecheck like hell. And the pause actually helped them to, you know, get used to the team and the environment and just living in the city. Like Blake Coleman's wife, you know, had a baby recently, and they just had to, you know, life away from the rink, get settled in and feel what it's like to be, you know, part of the Tampa Bay Lightning. All those things away from the ice settled down. And when they came back to start again, they were full on part of the group and they were ready to go.
With Lightning TV analyst Brian Engblom, it's Nick Alberga, Brian Burke, and Justin Bourne here on Hockey Central. So the Stanley Cup final set, game one tomorrow night, Brian, Dallas and the Tampa Bay Lightning. What do you think of the opponent, and what kind of issues will they give Tampa going forward here?
I was surprised, to be honest with you. I thought Vegas was going to come out of the West. I said that at the beginning, and I thought they were going to beat Dallas, and good on Dallas. I know that I haven't really looked at all the analytics from that series. But from what I did, I think a lot of the numbers seem to go in Vegas' way, but Dallas just wins. And, you know, that's what it's about, right? So they got the top line guys who have the names, and then you've got the experienced guys like Corey Perry that you know from the past, and of course, Joe Pavelski. But then you have, you know, several other guys that You know, Gerionov, who's done just a hell of a job with them, and now Kiviranta. And nobody knows these guys. That's a valuable tool, I think, for those guys, because relatively speaking, you don't know them. So the Lightning are going to have to familiarize themselves with these guys very quickly, because look at the impact they've had on the scoreboard and their ability to win. So they play tight. They also had that crazy wide open series you guys were referring to a couple of minutes ago. But it revolves around their defense. And when I see Jamie Oleksiak on a breakaway scoring a goal, I go, what the hell is going on here? But it is. And then Heiskanen is one of the great players in the game. I just love watching that kid. John Klingberg reminds me of Zubov, a lot like Zubov. And he's already established himself as a terrific defenseman. Esa Lindell is a real cornerstone guy. And so you got Sekera in there, and he's done a terrific job. Their defense is obviously very key, and they're the highest scoring defense group in the playoffs, where they have 53 points and I think 13 goals. Well, the Lightning have 13 goals now too from their D-core and 46 points. So I think you're going to see two teams that feel pretty similar against each other, and it's going to be as much about will than skill in these finals.
Berkey, you got another one to wrap up here?
Yeah, sure. So, Brian, with the back-to-back in there, which is, I know they're trying to get this over as quickly as they can, but is that going to be hard for the goaltender? Vasilevskiy's played every minute of every game so far.
Yeah, you know what, Brian, I don't think so. We were discussing that last night. As a matter of fact, we, our TV crew and whatever, Rick Peckman and I were talking about it, and we think actually it's an advantage. He is in superior shape. He is used to it. He loves to play, and he wouldn't even blink if you asked him. He's like, oh, yeah, hell yeah, I'm playing. Absolutely. I don't think it's a problem for him. He hasn't been inundated with a lot of shots. I mean, look at even at the overtime games that they've had in this series against the Islanders. He didn't face a lot of shots. Now, there's a lot of mental stuff, obviously, that goes on in overtime games, and that's where he has really grown as a goaltender, and that's just experience, right? But I think that he's in fine physical condition. He'll be okay with it, and I don't see any problem at all. And as a matter of fact, we think it's a little advantage over Hudobin, who's built a little bit differently, and we'll see if he's as good on the second night as Vasilevskiy is. It'll be interesting to watch.
And I will jump in and ask one more. Rick Peckham, who's hanging it up, what a great run for him. What a great broadcaster. What a great guy.
Berkey, I'm glad you brought that up. Awesome. It's been 5 years, for me to be able to work with Rick. He's a very selfless guy and very easy to work with. I'm so glad that he's being acknowledged and going into Broadcasting Hall of Fame. Foster Hewitt Award is a big deal. He's very humbled by it and feels great, and as he should. 42 years in the business, 24 years here with the Tampa Bay Lightning. And he has that perfectionist attitude where if he makes a mistake or an error, he fixes it right away. And he's, pounding the desk because he's mad at himself. But, anybody else makes a mistake, he just overlooks it and keeps going. But he has that rhythm and that great voice. He learned how to use his pipes a long time ago. And there's a rhythm and he just makes you feel good doing the game. And you understand what's going on out there, and it's been a great pleasure. So good for him. He rides off into the sunset a happy man, and I can tell you, by January coming up, you will not want to have him on the golf course. He'll be shooting in the 70s on a regular basis. He is unreal with a wedge in his hand, so be careful.